and after a moment Nate reappeared with Herbert in tow. Nate pushed past us, and Herbert stuffed the rest of the room with himself before closing the door on the clown car studio. Nate cleared his throat. "This is pretty important." He stuck his hands in his pockets and looked worried. Herbert gestured toward the young man. "Tell him. This tape." Nate paused. "It's produced." I shot a glance at Lolo, but she looked as confused as me. "What do you mean, produced?" His eyes flitted around in a nervous way.
"The feds made this recording. These two guys aren't even talking to each other."
Chief Long leaned into him.
"What?" "I was listening to the amplified tape, and I kept hearing these little bumps. You know, sounds between the people speaking. It's really well done, but it's dubbed."
He gestured toward the equipment behind him.
"This conversation's been patched together. The feds made this up, man."
He half turned and hit a few keys on the computer, and Artie Small's songs and Clarence Last Bull's voices exploded through the speakers. He immediately turned the volume down.
"I edited it so that you can listen to the transition points between them talking."
I listened carefully to the amplified version. And he was right. Lolo Long's eyes were wide as she turned to me.
"I can hear it."
"Yep, so can I." Nate punched some more keys, and the music in the background leaped forward.
"There's something else."
I listened for a moment. "Ira Hayes, I know. We checked the jukebox up at Jimtown, and it's not there."
Nate shook his head. "No, not that. Listen."
We all did, but it was Lolo who asked,
"What are we listening for?"
"The lyrics." The chief and I looked at each other and then at Nate. He gave us an exasperated look.
"They're repeated."
We listened to the portion about the flag and throwing a dog a bone and then listened to it again.
Lolo laughed. "It's the chorus."
Nate frowned.
"No, it's not.
And even if it was, it wouldn't be repeated that soon.
Somebody dubbed the music in so that it would drown out the edits. But they didn't realize they were repeating those lyrics."
I glanced at Herbert, who had had a lifetime of experience in the field.
"What do you think?"
He nodded his head and looked sad.
"The kid came and got me, and I listened to it a bunch of times. He's right. Somebody put this recording together."
"Why would they do that?"
Nate was almost vibrating with energy. "It's the federal government, man. This is the kind of shit they do."
As one of the two people in the room with a badge, I didn't really want to be that voice of reason, but it seemed like somebody should say it.
"Nate, that's kind of crazy."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean that if Cliff Clyde thought there was anything fishy about this tape..."
I paused for a moment, thinking about the AIC's flexible attitude concerning any kind of rule, which had resulted in his being here on the res in the first place. Lolo studied me.
"What?"
I took a deep breath and tried to flush the wacky idea from my system.
"It doesn't make any sense. Why would the FBI be after Artie?"
"They've been after my brother for years, man. He's a warrior, and they've been trying to keep him down."
He pulled the CD from the player.
"We should go to the newspapers and get them to expose this."
I reached out and took the CD.
"No, we're going to go play this for Cliff Clyde and see what he has to say."
Nate pegged the needles.
"Are you crazy? Those are the guys that did this, man."
"Maybe, maybe not. Anyway, if Cliff had anything to do with it, us confronting him will pretty much stop this stuff in its tracks. If he doesn't know about it, then maybe he can help us figure out who did it."
"They'll burn the radio station down, right, Herb?"
Herbert shrugged.
"They could. I mean, stuff like that happens all the time."
I looked to Lolo for a little support, unsure of what I was going to do if she joined in with the conspiracy theory.
"Chief Long?"
She looked at both Nate and Herbert.
"You guys watch a lot of Fox News, don't you?"
Nate waved her remark away.
"I'm serious. The black helicopters are going to come along and sweep you guys away, and Herb and I are going to be sitting up here at Ground Zero."
If he'd had room, he would have paced.
"Audrey knew something, so they killed her. Then they killed Clarence to shut him up, and now they want to pin it all on Artie."
I interrupted the rant. "What could Audrey have known?"
"I don't know. Something."
I sighed.
"This all sounds pretty crazy, Nate."
"Fine, go talk to your buddies at the FBI and see what they say." He waved a hand on my face. Been nice knowing you.
I looked at Herbert, but he seemed to be concentrating on the floor. I stepped past him and opened the door.
Come on, Chief, let's go.
Long followed, and we started out, making it to the reception area before Nate caught my arm.
Hey, look, if something does happen to you guys, what should I do?
Stay away from the windows.
I'd meant it as a joke, but I don't think he got it.
How well do you know this Cliff Cly?
She was powering her way down the gravel road, the big V8 yowling in protest.
Like I said, I dealt with him out on the Powder River. He's not the most ethical of the Bureau guys I've dealt with, but he gets results.
Do you think Artie is one of his results?
I braced my hand on the padded dash and could see where I was wearing an impression into the leather.
Well, it was strangely convenient how that tape showed up to seal the deal just when we needed it. But it seems, well, awkward.
She roared the GMC onto the asphalt and laid a strip of rubber that must have been a good 10 feet long. The people on the sidewalks of Lame Deer ignored the racing Yukon as if it going down Main Street at 60 miles an hour was a daily occurrence. Come to think of it, it probably was.
You think we should take this to the head office in Salt Lake?
I shook my head. Mike McGroder? No. We'll give Cliff a chance to hear it and see what he has to say. Do you have any idea where he might be?
She pulled the mic from her dash and hit the button.
Base, this is Unit 1. Anybody there?
Static. Unit 1, this is Base. Over.
Charles, do you have any idea where the AIC might be?
Static. Yeah, he was just here. Picked up both Kelly Joe and Artie Smallsong. He said he was taking them to Hardin for protective custody.
She glanced at me.
How long ago?
Static.
Maybe 5 minutes.
I reached up and clicked on the light and sirens as the Warrior Chief four-wheel drifted through the main intersection of Lame Deer, barely missing a delivery van and a Ford Explorer. By the time we got to the big ridge overlooking the separate lands of the Cheyenne and Crow, we were doing 120. The muscles at the side of her jaw bunched.
That settles it.
Not necessarily.
Bullshit. He forged the tape, and now he's trying to seal it up tight by taking Artie.
She flung the Yukon around a sweeping corner, and I was pretty sure the inside wheels were off the ground. I glanced up at the integral roll bar and was slightly reassured.
It has to be. When we hit the straightaway above Busby, not to be confused with Bernie, white or red, you could see the caravan of federal vehicles approaching the gigantic Moncure teepee that had once been a gift shop and tourist trap located beside the town's general store. Lolo's foot sank deeper into the SUV's throat, and I watched as the orange needle wound higher. By the time we approached the string of one Yukon, one Suburban, and the Expedition, I'm pretty sure we were only hitting the high spots on 212. The chief launched past the rear vehicle, and I could see the surprised looks on the faces of the feds as she blew past the second one and slid past the leading vehicle with her anti-lock brakes, most assuredly locked. We were still hanging out into the forward lane, clouded in blue smoke, when the thing finally stopped, and I was just glad the airbags hadn't deployed. I unsnapped my belt, pushed the door open, and stepped onto scoria-colored asphalt. Cly was the first out of the vehicle, and he stepped toward us with a hand on the Sig Sauer at his hip, motioning to the agent who had been driving to lower his weapon as he came out the driver's side. He smiled at my appearance.
"Hey, nice shirt. You decide to go native?"
He opened his arms to encompass the little bighorn country.
Good place for it, Kimisabi.
Lolo Long came around the back side of her unit and pointed a finger at Cly.
Where are my prisoners?
The agent looked as if he'd been smacked.
What?
I kept an eye on the driver as he lowered his weapon but did not reholster, as three more field agents showed up from the other two vehicles. They looked like a preppy barbershop quartet. Long had made it to the front of the Suburban and actually kicked the front bumper.
I said, where are my prisoners? You can hand over Kelly Joe and Natty to the DEA or whoever, but you have no right to take Artie Smallsong.
She glanced at the other agents, who were wisely keeping their distance, self-preservation being a core class at the academy. Cliff glanced at me with an odd look on his face and then pushed his sunglasses up on his wavy locks.
You're running a skeleton staff in a concrete block. I thought I'd do you a favor.
I don't need your favors.
He looked at me again,
spoke slowly, and with the Midwestern accent that Wade Barsett had said, "Okay." She circled around to stand in front of him, and I think he was glad the open door was between them. "I'm running a homicide investigation, and you're trying to run off with my chief witness." The agent looked at me again. "I thought he was the chief suspect." "He was, until we listened more carefully to your bullshit tape." I watched him closely, and you could be mistaken about which side of the coin it was that Cliff Cly of the FBI had been playing. But he seemed genuinely very confused. "What are you talking about?" "The phone recording is crap, and you know it." An 18-wheeler slowed at the phalanx of official vehicles, the air brakes blowing out like an angry mechanical bull. The operator hung out the window to look at the drama unfolding. Lolo Long was momentarily distracted and shouted at the truck driver, "What are you looking at? You want me to check your logs or something?" The truck sped up, and I stepped a little closer to the epicenter of the conflict, hoping the chief would remember I was on her side. "Why don't we pull these vehicles over to the other side of the road and get this all straightened out?" Long looked at me for a moment and then marched past to navigate the GMC into the gravel lot surrounding the derelict tourist attraction. The feds followed suit, and Clyde told a couple of his boys to go get the rest of the agents a few soft drinks from the general store 300 feet back. They disappeared, but the eyes of the remaining agents in the assorted vehicles watched us like we were trying to steal their collective bones, which at least one of us was. "Play it again." Lolo hit the button, and we listened to the remastered CD for the second time. The expression on his face didn't change, but he disengaged himself from the vehicle and stood there for a moment, dusting the toe of his dress shoe on the back of a pant leg. After a moment, he walked across the crumbling concrete pad and peered into the Moncur teepee, raised a hand, and pushed open the flapping screen door, which was held to the structure by half a hinge. "So you think the recording has been doctored?" The chief and I stood by the grill guard of her unit and watched him. "You heard it. What do you think?" He didn't say anything, but stepped forward and disappeared into the shingled structure, his voice echoing in the emptiness. "I heard this thing was built by the WPA, but I think that might be bullshit." We listened as the resonance of his footfalls circled the inside, the FBI men watching. I pushed off the SUV, followed Cliff's path, and found him standing in the center, looking up at the blue sky, which was approaching the zenith of afternoon heat. Lolo followed, and we watched Cly slip off his navy blazer. He continued to look through the openings where the shingles and roof underlayment had let go. "Why would the WPA build something like this? I mean, a dam, a trail, a retaining wall, I can understand, but a giant wood teepee? That doesn't make much sense." I tipped my hat back and wiped the sweat from my forehead. "What's going on, Cliff?" He walked to the side of the building and put a hand on a support as thick as a telephone pole. The one he had chosen was cracked and would someday give way, taking the southern portion of the structure with it. "To be honest," Long interrupted, "that'd be nice." He smiled, the matinee idol smile he'd probably been using since junior varsity. "I don't know." "Bullshit." Lolo took a step toward him, her face suddenly lit by the cascading beams of sunshine blasting through the openings like headlights. "Bullshit." He sighed. "Honest Injun." He looked at me and then licked his lips like he was looking for the words. "Look, the tape was forwarded from a source in the BIA." He gestured toward the CD still in the player in Lolo's vehicle. "They seemed really fired up about it. Now, I don't know how they got it or who they might have gotten it from." "Bullshit." Chief Long wasn't buying it. "It's just too convenient, Agent. Just too convenient." He shook his head. "I thought the same thing. But the BIA guys are the goods. On the up and up, really." She folded her arms. "Well, that leaves you." "Chief?" The two of them turned to look at the field agent standing in the doorway to my right. "I'm sorry to interrupt, Chief Cly, but I got your coke." The AIC walked over and took the can, then dismissed the lesser agent with a curt nod. Cly turned to look at us, the soda dangling in his hand.
So let me get this straight, Chief Long. You're accusing me of all this?
Who would you accuse?
He glanced at me and then back to her. Look, I know I've got a somewhat checkered past, but do you really think I would do something like this? She didn't say anything, and I had just started to when he spoke.
Ouch!
He started to open the can, but then didn't. Instead, he just stared at the pull tab.
That hurts, Chief.
He continued on through the battered screen door, carefully closing it for comic effect. Then he stuck a forefinger and pinky in the sides of his mouth and blew out a whistle that loosened a few more shingles. A chorus of doors opened in the Fed vehicles out front.
All right, people, listen up. As is the plight of the white man in Indian country, our wagons have been surrounded and we are going to give up our prisoners.
Lolo glanced at me and then back to him.
What does... You want one, you get them all.
The agents were smiling as they opened the rear doors and began unlocking the prisoners. It was all great fun. I shook my head at him. Come on, Cly. He ignored me, tucked the can of Coke under his arm, and clapped his hands.
Let's go, we've got a lunch at Walker's Grill in Billings. The federal government is buying.
There were mild cheers as they walked Kelly Joe and Natty in their traveling chains toward the chief's Yukon. They needed to make a little more effort into getting Artie Smallsong from the expedition, since he'd been heavily drugged.
Thorazine.
Kelly Joe was the first to poke his head back out the door and ask,
Hey, what's going on?
Cly shrugged.
You've been remanded from our responsibility, Mr. Burns. I guess they're going to take you back to Lame Deer.
He turned to look at Lolo.
Are you taking them back to Lame Deer?
She looked at him, defiant till the end.
Yes.
He made a big show of slapping his forehead.
Oh, wait. I forgot. With the amount of controlled substances these two had on them, the charges were upped, and they have to be transported to a federal facility, and the closest one would be Hardin.
I stepped in close and looked down at Cly as they tried to get the limp and drooling Artie Smallsong into the passenger side of the Yukon, Natty having taken up more than her third of the bench seat. Finally, and with great enjoyment, the agents decided to just dump Artie in the rear cargo space. Kelly Joe's voice sounded from inside.
Hey, can I get some of what you gave him?
Cliff. He wouldn't meet my eyes and watched as his men closed the hatch on the drugged Artie.
This isn't right. We brought this to you.
He pointed a finger at me.
You know, Sheriff, I thought we had an understanding. I know you're pretty much a by-the-book guy and I'm not, but we're both on the same side, and we get results.
He started to say something else, then thought better of it, and started off again. He slid in the gravel, and his voice struck the hard, sun-baked ground.
I owe you my life, but I don't owe you my reputation.
He handed the can to Lolo Long as he passed.
Here, babe, have a Coke and a smile.
Chapter 15. Lolo Long chugged her Coke and looked out the driver's side window at me, standing there in the law enforcement center's parking lot, a place where I was making a habit of saying goodbye to beautiful women. She pulled a pop can from her lips.
I figure I should enjoy it. It may be the last thing the federal government gives me.
She considered the can, along with whatever communicable diseases Cly might have. Kelly Joe and Natty were still in the back, comfortably dozing in the Yukon's air conditioning. 2 hours round trip?
I can do it faster.
Please don't. She laughed, and I placed my forearms on the sill and twirled the ring that was still on my little finger. That'll put you back here this evening. Come have dinner with us. She shook her head.
I can't. I've got too much to think about, and besides, I've got to go find a killer.
I started to open my mouth, but she spoke quickly.
I know you didn't want any part of this from the beginning, but you helped me, and then I thought you were feeding me to the feds when they came up with the tape, but you didn't.
I really appreciate that, and whether you know it or not, I've learned a lot from you in the last week.
She tightened her grip around my forearm, where I'd rolled up my sleeves. I wasn't much help, as a matter of fact. I think I made the situation worse.
She shook her head.
No, you didn't.
She averted her eyes to the windshield and the glare of the late afternoon sun, her words taking on a note of finality.
You're probably right about me not being fit for this job. and I probably won't be able to keep it, but it was nice to get a taste of what it can be like. Her breath wavered in her throat. I want to thank you for that. I thought about how this was not how it was supposed to end, with her providing cab service for the feds and me walking away. In a perfect cinematic world, we would have captured the bad guys in spectacular fashion with explosions, car chases, and a parting kiss. She would have been played by Ava Gardner, and I would have been played by Robert Taylor. I looked at her. I was wrong. She looked back at me, and I could feel her eyes on the side of my face. You're going to make a great cop if you stick to it. I turned back and tried not to let the sickle-shaped scar draw my attention like a tide. Don't let them run you off your patch. You can do a lot of good here. Her eyes stayed level, and there was no irony in her response. Thanks. She patted my arm. I'll see you around, Sheriff. She pulled the gear lever down. Who knows? I might need a job. I watched as the GMC whipped from the parking lot and headed out for the territories west. I was thinking about a lot of things and felt that strange feeling, like a thought that needed scratching, the one I couldn't reach. But the final thought before I started to wrestle with the starter on my nemesis was that I was hungry. The next thought was that I didn't have anybody to have delayed lunch with when it dawned on me that I did. He was still waiting by the hospital bed when I came to get him, but his charge was fast asleep in the crib. His tail thumped the floor, and his mouth lolled open with an inviting smile. Lolo's mother stood by me with a clipboard under her arm as we watched Adrian move once, place a tiny hand by his head, and relax again. I spoke softly like I was in church. He's a quiet kid. The only time I ever heard him cry was when somebody threw him off a cliff. She looked at me for a moment, possibly unused to cop humor, and then nodded. I think he's cried 3 times since he's been here. At feeding time or changing his diapers, you come in and he's just looking around like he's taken in the place. Audrey used to bring him to work with her, and nobody complained because he was such a good little guy. She walked over to the crib and arranged the blanket, her hand lingering on the child. I was out putting some things in my car and saw Lolo pulling out, hell-bent for leather. Not that she drives any other way. She's headed for Hardin, but said she'd be back later this evening. I think the federal agencies are going to pull the plug on our homicide investigation. Hazel looked sad and answered in a low voice, our conversation taking on a conspiratorial quality. That's not going to make Lo happy. She's really enjoyed working with you. And I don't think she's enjoyed much of anything else since she's gotten back.
What's the story on her husband? Kyle, is it? And her son?
Danny? Oh, I go see them up in Billings every other weekend. I studied her.
And Lolo doesn't?
No, I'm not sure what to make of it, but I'm hoping that over time she'll work whatever it is out. The baby clutched Hazel's finger. I've gotten to the age where I try and let people solve their own problems.
What age is that, anyway?
My eyes were turned to the orphan, and I was overwhelmed by the odds against the little guy. Do you have any idea where Adrian's going to go? She sighed. Not really. There's Audrey's sister, but Herbert, his good horse, is the godfather, and he's been so sweet in coming in and checking on him, but I don't see him as the adoptive father type. I don't know. Maybe I'll see if I can get him. My eyes came up from the baby to her face. She caught my gaze. I'm pretty good at raising children, even with Lowe's present problems, just in case you haven't noticed.
I have.
Anyway, you better get out of here. Don't you have a wedding to plan?
Oh, the wedding juggernaut appears to be staggering forth on its own weight and took off toward Billings for supplies and the groom. My daughter arrived and took charge. I was released on my own recognizance. I laughed gently. I've been finding myself in that position a lot lately.
She gently pulled her finger away from Adrian and joined me at the foot of the crib. It must be hard with your wife gone.
Yep, it is. All I can think about is how much Katie looks like Martha, and all the things that Martha would have wanted to tell her. Hell, I can't remember to tell her all the things I want to tell her. Every time I look at her and realize what's happening, I just choke up. Hazel gripped my arm and put on a voice tinged with brio.
Get a grip on yourself, man. It's only a wedding.
She pulled a slip of paper from the clipboard under her arm. I gave Lo a list of the individuals who were prescribed all or most of the medications that were listed on the medical bracelet you found, but I found a few more. I looked at the piece of paper, and there were more than 40 names on the list.
Brother.
I scanned down the lines, my eye catching on Lonnie Littlebird.
Lonnie?
He went through a bad period when he lost his legs. I continued reading. Running Wolf, Lone Bear, American Horse, Bear Comes Out, Big Hawk, Bobtail Horse, Buffalo Horn, Red Fox, Crazy Mule, Eagle Feathers, Elk Shoulder, Fire, Crow, Little Coyote, Magpie, Old Mouse. But nothing from the menagerie struck me. I folded the piece of paper and placed it in my breast pocket. Well, it was worth a try. She pulled me toward the door. Smiling, I gestured toward the brute. You mind if I take my dog to a late lunch? She went back to watching the baby.
Not at all. Just have him back here by tonight. I sleep easier knowing he's in here with the little guy.
I patted my leg, and the monster rose from the floor, rear end first, stretching and yawning with a terrifying show of teeth. Come on, I'll buy you a cheeseburger. He wagged, which I took as a yes. When we got outside to Resdog, Dog sat on the concrete parking lot and looked at me. I know, but it's all we've got. I opened the door, but he continued to look at me. Come on. With a look of resignation, he made the leap to the shower curtain-covered seat, the very picture of fallen dignity. I closed the door and went around and climbed in the driver's side. Don't worry. I'll get our truck back, I promise. I hit the starter and, predictably, nothing happened. The generator and oil lights glowed feebly back at me, and I looked at Dog in apology. As much as you hate this truck, I hate it more. I climbed out, unhooked the rubber straps behind the grill, pinched my finger into a blood blister with the hood latch, and finally got the thing open long enough for it to close onto the back of my head. I pushed it up again with more effort and a little anger this time, reset my hat, and stood outside its jaws long enough to make sure the hood would stay up. Relatively sure I wasn't going to get snapped again, I wiggled the corroded positive clamp on what had to be the original Autolite Stay Full battery, and thought I'd be happy if the damn thing just stayed charged. The greenish-white buildup on the lug fell away just enough of the worn bare part of the cable to turn and rub against the inner fender and shoot sparks around the engine bay, my hand held in an electrified death grip. I yanked away and stood there holding my fingers and restrained myself from kicking the grill guard, sure if I did that it would release the parking brake and the three-quarter ton would roll over me. Then I remembered it didn't have a parking brake, and went ahead and kicked it. When we pulled up to the Charging Horse Casino, which I had decided was as good for late lunch as anywhere, there was no shade in the parking lot, so even if I wanted to leave Dog, which I didn't, I couldn't. He followed me up the concrete ramp to the door where an aged Cheyenne with an impressive ponytail and a black silk jacket with a security badge stopped us with an extended hand. He looked at me for a moment, but then let his hand fall. Hello, Walt. Mr. Blackhorse. The older man, who had been my sponsor at the peyote meeting, that seemed like years ago, dropped a hand down to Dog's level so that the beast could sniff at it, and then lay a lick on him that covered the width of Albert's knuckles. I'm afraid there are no dogs allowed in the casino. How about service dogs? Albert looked down at the behemoth. He outgrew his vest. Albert smiled and scratched behind a red, brown, and black ear. How about I let you take him into the bingo hall? There's nobody in there, and I can get Lorraine to serve you at the back commissary window. Sounds like a deal. He ushered us through the discordant music of the one-armed bandits,
and deposited us at the counter in the cavernous room in the rear. The place was as big as a gymnasium, complete with a scoreboard the size of a ballpark's, and what must have been 100 event tables with folding chairs. After a moment, the gate rolled up, and Lorraine Tutu smiled at me and even a dog.
"I see you took the precaution of eating almost alone this time."
I laughed and looked down at the furry face. "Oh, he'll get his share. As a matter of fact, I was thinking that I'd order him up his own. They've been feeding him dry food over at the health center, and I figured he was about due a hamburger."
She looked concerned. "Was he hurt?"
"Nope, he's been standing guard over Adrian Lasbull."
Her eyes melted. "I'll see that he gets a double helping."
Albert Blackhorse came around the corner and took a stool on the other side of Dog, then reached out and rubbed the beast's head. "The afternoon guy is here, so I thought I'd come back, rest my dogs, and eat my late lunch with you, if you don't mind."
"Speaking for the both of us, we're delighted to have your company."
Turning back to Mrs. Tutu, I ordered up a double cheeseburger for me, a couple of patties for Dog, and anything Albert wanted, along with some iced teas.
"I'll take one of those Mexican salads, watching my heart."
Lorraine smiled and disappeared into the kitchen, and I